This week's episode is brought to you by Saffron Lane.
Oh God, one more podcast?
Welcome back. Hello, hello, hello. This is Maz Khan coming at you with another episode of Daisy Standard Time. Got my boy in his recording studio. My man, the myth, the legend, the everything. Ooh, it's a nice jacket you got there. Why don't you introduce yourself in it?
Thank you, brother. Maz Ali here speaking. Well, it takes one to know one. I can't even tell if that's a charcoal denim or dark blue or light gray. I don't know what's going on there.
It's a blue, like the color of your eyes, baby boy.
If I was on Rate Desi and I had colored contacts, then yeah, it would be my color of my eyes. But
my God. Do you remember Rate Desi? Of course you do. Dude, Rate Desi was that site. Like people... Dude. For those uninitiated, or those, I guess, of a younger persuasion, Rate Desi was this really trash website that got started, I don't know, I guess back when I was in high school even. And you would essentially upload, it was the OG Facebook, like you'd upload pictures of yourself, and people would actively comment, like rate you. It was like the crappy thing that Jesse Eisenberg does in The Social Network, except you did it to yourself. You chose to let people come on there and judge you to your face. It's unbelievable.
Which in its own self is a holistically wonderful thing. And it's kind of funny. We would look at that in one point of time and we were like, oh my God, what the hell? Just putting yourself out there, letting people judge you for how hot you are, whatever. I mean, fast forward 20 years later, we have Tinder, we have Bumble, which essentially it's kind of the same thing. So here we are. So let's say a trailblazer in the social dating app, even if you will, world.
Yeah. So on that note, I guess we'll turn to something a little bit less divisive. So today we've got a very special episode. We're going to be hearing from an actual singer, songwriter himself at the end of the episode. A lot of you guys have been looking forward to this. So stay tuned till the end. We'll announce who that is towards the end. But today's episode is about one of my favorite shows that's come about. And one of the things I think that Pakistan can be most proud about in the last few years, and that is Coke Studio.
Yeah.
So, Mazi, I know that much like myself and probably like a lot of our other friends, Coke Studio has become this phenomenon. It's this TV show essentially that's just started, you know, in the early 2000s by one of the Vital Signs members. And we covered Vital Signs in the Pakistani Rock episode.
Right.
But Rohail Hayat and his wife, they basically started this show. You know, thought it would be like, you know, a little something just to promote Coke, obviously, or whatever. And, you know, here we are several years later, and it's a huge success, not just in Pakistan, but all around the world. Right.
Definitely. No, absolutely. It was one of those random phenomenons that came about for me, at least. I think I caught note of it in college. And we had a lot of old artists, a new artists alike, coming together, banding together, and singing these wonderful ballads, whether it's remixes or new numbers. And really just the production value was the first thing I caught note of. And it was something, it was unlike anything else I've ever seen. But just to dive into a little bit, you mentioned that it was started by Rohail Hayat. Excellent arrangements and great vocalists drew a pretty big audience. Right. And the show is now the longest running show in Pakistan. And it's been run by Strings. We mentioned that band as well in the Pakistani Rock episode since 2013. And then Nuri band members in 2018. And now back to Rohail Hayat. So there's some classics that come to mind. Obviously, Afri Afri, Tajdar-e Haram. But why is this important to you, Maz Khan? Tell me a little bit more as to the effect that this had on your life, and a little bit more into what it is, sure, if you will, too. Yeah,
sure. So, I mean, it's a fantastic show, and you know, I think it's funny that
show.
Fantastic. You know, it's a mind-blasting episodes. You know, it's that fantastic. Yeah, but I think it's interesting that a lot of the things that we cover in the Pakistani, in this season of Pakistan, Pakistani media is very incestuous, right? You see a lot of the same names over and over again, and when we're talking about Pakistani rock and all the different bands that made a big mark, you know, when Pakistan kind of was a lot more conservative and people were rebelling and brought it into this new age of kind of a liberal Pakistan. It's the same names, again, that we're seeing with Coke Studio. This is the biggest show. This is the longest running show. And even though we talk about Pakistani dramas as being like the kind of gemstone of Pakistani media, you know, right. Coke Studio is overtaking that and really is becoming the most recognized. I think at this point it is the most recognized. More people probably know about Coke Studio internationally than do about Coke Studio, you know, or than do about Pakistani dramas everywhere else. So what it means to me, you know, I just want to start off by saying this is the thing that we get to be proud of, right? I mean, this is something that's created in our generation that we kind of bring to the forefront, and we're able to say like, hey, we're proud to be Pakistani. And this is one of the things that we brought to the table that no one really else did. To the extent that, you know, there's a lot of you know, us borrowing from other cultures and whatever, but Coke Studio is something that's become an international phenomenon. You know, it's no longer just stuck to Pakistan or whatever. It's also in India. There's other versions of it in the Middle East. So it's become this whole thing. And I think what that really does is it brings this crossover, right? It generates this kind of, okay, there was this old, and there's a lot of bands and artists, and we talk about them in some of our other episodes, who come on this show and perform. And then there's kind of the current, which is like the Strings, Rohail, Nuri, like all those guys that are, like you said, kind of shepherding the music production and bringing it all forward. And then there's the new people. Yeah. So the people, the new, the people who are up and coming. We'll talk about them a little bit, you know, but I think about like my little sister who's 10 years younger than me, and right. she's probably, you know, finding out about a lot of artists, both old and new, that otherwise she wouldn't have been able to. So I think this Coke Studio, the beauty of it is it's like it's a crossover. It really, it's a bridge between different generations, and you get a lot of different artists. So, you know, you want to talk about some of the artists that kind of come through the different generations?
Yeah, absolutely. So some of the artists, and again, we touched upon this before in the previous episodes, but our parents' generation was more so Qawwali, Shairi, right? A lot of these types of knots and traditional music and folklore music that they listened to, which we were sometimes involuntarily forced to listen to when we were kids, but then we developed that appreciation much later in our life. Our generation, more so into Pakistani rock, the kind of the grungy music, and those two worlds coming together. So a lot of the names from both of those generations have come to Coke Studio, right? So the first people that come to mind are Atif Aslam from the Pakistani rock generation, from our generation. Then we have people like Rahat Fateh Ali Khan, who is from our generation, but he comes from that Qawwali, Qawwal tradition. Right. Amjad Sabri as well. Abral Huq. We have some renowned names too, people that, you know, Coke Studio wasn't just for established names already. It also gave and paved the way to a lot of new artists as well, right? Afri Afri was made famous by Rahat, but also Momina Mostasan, who was the singer, the female singer who captivated audiences.
Yeah, I mean, she got huge because of that.
And she got huge because of that. Yeah, exactly. And then she went on and did a couple more songs as well. But Asim Azhar, another one, a talent actually that's from the United States, from my understanding. And again, just got big really off of from doing YouTube videos and songs and went on to Coke Studio. And now he has that platform. So Ali Sethi is another one as well. That's a big time number. But, you know,
you get people from all walks. I mean, I think that, and you know, you've named so many of these guys. And I think it's so interesting that you get such a range, not only of artists, but like, it really is. It's a melting pot, right? You get people who can do Qawwali. You get people who aren't Qawwals covering Qawwalis, right? You get like Atif Aslam doing Tajdar-e-Haram, which it's not normally his bread and butter, but he killed it. I mean, that became one of the most famous songs. So, and then you also get the kind of poppy guys like Ali Azmat and stuff like that. And then you get, Ali Zafar. And then you get the rock, the true rock guys like Ali Azmat coming in and doing their things, and it's fantastic. And again, going back to the kind of the incest of Pakistani industry, you know, if you go look at the arrangements and who's putting this stuff together, and I think one of the reasons why it's so good is because there's musicians at the helm. They're the ones who are really giving the direction and, you know, putting together the arrangements and stuff like that, and it shows clearly. I mean, man, yeah. some of these arrangements are just so well put together. But, you know, I'll use Offering Offering as an example, because a lot of people have heard of that, right? Offering Offering is this age old song that Nusrat Fateh Khan made very, very famous, one of his most famous famous songs, both lyrically and musically. And Raha did it justice, you know, singing the verses that Nusrat had originally done. And that was actually written by Javed Akhtar, I believe, was the original lyrics for Offering Offering. And then, you know, when they came on Coke Studio, they thought, okay, let's pair the old with the new. Let's put Momina Mustesan, who was at that time, she was doing pretty well, but relatively, especially relative to Rahat, an unknown, right? They put her next to him, and she absolutely blows it out of the water with brand new lyrics that were written specifically for her. And all of a sudden, you've got a new superstar in Momina.
Yeah.
You've got this new version of this old classic sung by not only, you know, a Qawwali giant, but also a new, you know, kind of new age pop, soon to be giant. And you've got this amazing, beautiful arrangement. It seems it flows seamlessly, and it's a beautiful thing. So I think that Coke Studio, it really is a mishmash of all different types of people, all different types of styles, all different types of songs. It's a good thing. It's a really good thing.
I would like to say I'm a bit of an extension of my parents. I mean, I know we all are, but in this sense, in this regard, where I really grew up listening to a lot of Qawwalis and a lot of these types of songs, which I really got into, obviously in my youth, but then I really started researching and getting into it in my teens. And singing these songs with people my age, they were like, what the hell are you singing, dog? Or what the hell, like, hand me the aux cable. You are no longer allowed on that anymore, right? Right. And it was a little bit frustrating sometimes. And now we have a platform like Coke Studio, which showcases a lot of these songs. Like, Dajdar-e Haram is a song written by the Sabri Brothers, right? And the original, I want to say, is about like 25 or 30 minutes long. Atif and company changed it to about 10 minutes long. It's funny because there is in the original one, we know he's telling people to come to Medina, like, oh, Medina, chale, right? And in the original, the Sabri Brothers, for like about 10 minutes at least, are just going, wow. All right. But it's nice that it shortened it for a bit, even though I appreciate the long version too. But what I'm getting at is, now that our generation and the newer generation have listened to these new versions, they have an appreciation for the old. And so that draws them to go back and do the research, like, oh, wait, Afri Afri, this is a really amazing, beautiful song. And then my mom would be like, you got to listen to the original Afri Afri. And then that sparks curiosity, like, really? Oh, good. And then that caused them to go back to YouTube. And I mean, just the genius of bringing those cultures together. Now we can finally sit down with our parents and watch, I think is genius. And I think you mentioned too that it's musicians that are making the show possible. For me, Coke Studio was always as if, like, the Jabberwockies, for me, for example, they wear the masks, they wear the white gloves. It's like, I think the reason why the Jabberwockies stick out, it's like you're watching music dance in front of you, right? You're not watching human beings. It's art. It's straight art. And for Coke Studio, it's the same way. I feel like I'm watching music composed. It is being composed for me, but it's like, I forget about the people that are almost involved. I forget about the hilarious different, like, hairstyles of the background vocalists, all these characters that are just making this music happen. And I'm just so entrenched in the music. And I think it's just so well done on that front.
It is. And, you know, it's funny that you say that, because I think that there's like, so, you know, there's other platforms that have done this idea of taking a song and then kind of stripping it down and taking out the electronic portions, making it more acoustic, and then, you know, performing it live in front of a studio audience. So you see this on like MTV jam sessions, or like VH1 recording sessions, or VH1 like New Artist Watch, or whatever. Like, you see it all in the US, where they take down, you know, artists and have them perform their songs live. I think that's a big part of even why things like James Corden's TV show, where he has people ride along in his car, right? Like, you see the artist sing it out loud in person, and it's impressive because you kind of forget about the person behind the song. And I think you're right. I think Coke Studio just jams this in front of your face, not just the artists themselves who are performing the music and singing the vocals, but you're right. I mean, the instruments that these guys use to put these arrangements together are incredible. I mean, there's one, I think it might be Tajdar-e Haram, or it might be Afreen. Yeah, which song it is, but I'll never get over it. There's like this woman, and she's holding this instrument, It just looks like a gigantic kind of like open cylinder, and there's what looks like chickpeas or some kind of beads inside. And as she rolls them, it's kind of like a rainmaker, except a rainmaker used to be kind of like an upright cylinder. And this is like a drum, like a flat drum. And she's just rolling around chickpeas in it. And that makes kind of like a cool noise. And that's how they use it. So it's I don't know what that instrument is called. I'm sure there's, you know, all kinds of those instruments in use, you know, being used all the time. Someone's got like Tupperware in the back, just like banging away. But I think that you're seeing music being made live, and the music production is probably the most talked about and critically well received aspect of this show. I don't think that if some, you know, nobody started up a show and was like, hey, you on the street that can kind of sing, why don't you come in and sing Afrin Afrin, an age old song that so many people are familiar with, but so many people are also very loyal to the original version, and I'm sure everyone will love it. You know me or you would walk in there and be like Afrin Afrin, and they'd kick us out because it's not good, and it wouldn't have gotten the show the acclaim that it did.
Yeah.
But the reason why it went so far, and I'm very sure of this, is because they bring in top-notch artists, they bring in top-notch musicians, and they absolutely crush it.
Yeah. Some of these people, because I'm weird, I always pay attention to, well, there's a Bollywood movie, to a lot of the background dancers. I've watched so many Bollywood movies that I've come to recognize the repeating background dancers and background dancing groups in every movie. I'm like, hey, it's him again. He's getting work, right? So like much of that regard, I have that same bond with Coke Studio as well. I'm like, hey, it's that vocalist again. Like, what's his name? Like, what? But it's great because now you're putting these guys who normally wouldn't have been discovered on display. And I think that is the beauty of it. It's for the musicians by the musicians, and that's what has entrenched everybody into so much before. So, I think my personal favorite memory is I was a big fan of Abral Huck, Below the Gutter, and Asante Jane Below the Gutter, Below the Gutter, Ticket Ticket Tao is still one of the greatest lyrics maybe of all time. Cut the ticket, Ticket Ticket Tao. Introduced by Abral Jutt.
I'm pretty sure it was because of the new version that I realized. So as a kid, you know, you just sing whatever is sung, and I'm like ticka ticka tao da ba tao ticka ticka tao, and I didn't realize it until it just came out again on Coke Studio, and he's like ticka ticka tao lan or line banao, make a line. So cut your ticket, make a line. You were today years old when you learned that. And it's just like this Punjabi guy saying line. He's the original Bacha or whatever. Like,
yes.
You just don't understand how he's pronouncing stuff. He's saying ticket katao line banao, but he's saying ticket katao line banao. So you don't understand what he's saying unless you like know that Punjabi kind of dialect or whatever and understand that. But it's so
but baby, it's catchy. And that's catchy. All that matters at so the end catchy. Of the day, dog. But he is the original Bacha. Abral Huck was the original rapper. Amazing. My niece Isla, she just turned 5. We introduced that song to her. The new one, the Coke Studio version, where and by the way, Abral Huck has aged damn well. Holy cow. I didn't recognize him. That's not him. I was like, that guy's 20 years old, but it was him.
You know, the question's always like, are these people just aging really well or are they just rich? And I think with him, it might be a combination of the both.
Maybe it's a combination of both, but I really do think it's rich. Richness.
I want to see everyone's pictures during quarantine. Like, I love that. I love that during quarantine, you're seeing like people posting on Instagram without any makeup or like anything. They're just like, this is me in my quarantine state. I'm like, oh. So you aren't amazing all the time. Okay, cool. Good to know.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I don't like the Don't Rush challenges, but it's just, there's something about them. But do you, folks? But Isla my niece listened to the new Abral Huck, Below the Gutter song, and she liked it. And then we had her listen to the old one, and we're like, which one do you like better? She's like, I like the old one better, Mas Chanchu.
Yeah.
And so that was such a cool like thing. I was like, yes, like that was my generation's thing, right? So
right.
That's just the proof. That's what proves it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what I said at the early outset here is like, you know, it's crazy how good the song. So if you just take the songs by themselves, they're amazing. They've done such a great job and they're phenomenally written and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But then you take a step back and you look at the bigger impact, and it really is bringing different walks of life together. It's bringing people, you know, like your niece who are so young and would never have really been exposed to Qawwali, or, you know, definitely not Abrar al-Haq or someone like that, who, like Fakir is another guy who's done a lot of the songs. He's come on there a few times. He also writes the lyrics for a lot of these other songs. Yeah. And they'd never come across him. You know, a lot of, like, my cousin, you know, he grew up partially in Pakistan, and we were just, you know, YouTubing random. Favorite pastime of mine, going through YouTube and just watching, like, a bunch of different Desi songs, whether it's Bollywood or Pakistani or whatever. And he's just, like, shook. He's just like, yo, how do you know all these songs by Strings and, like, whatever? And I'm like, you know, a lot of people know about Strings. I don't think that's all that uncommon. They even have, you know, Spotify playlists and whatnot. But then we get to, like, Fakir songs. And he's like, how do you know about Fakir? And I'm like, I don't know, dude. I just, you know, you fall into a hole one day and you discover these new artists. And that's how you get to it. But then I realized, you know, I saw them when I was growing up in our house. You know, we had those Pakistani Indian channels. But the younger generation, they don't really go through that. They have their own TVs, have their own devices. They don't have to watch whatever their parents are watching. And they're able to kind of branch out on their own and do other stuff. We were forced to watch this stuff. That's how we became fans. So there's no exposure for them. And this is the only way to do it. So Coke Studio does a great job of really kind of bringing out artists. Sure, it definitely made some people's careers, but it's also bringing back previously very, very famous artists and introducing them to a new generation. And I think that's a beautiful thing. I think that's awesome.
100%. Mazkan, in your, what are some of your favorite performances? I mean, we mentioned some already. We mentioned Bildigar, the newer version. We mentioned Afri Afri, Taj Dari Haram. Are there any other notables that come to your mind?
Yeah, I think, you know, the big ones are always going to be the big ones. Taj Dari Haram is definitely one of my favorites. But I love, there's this one song called Sab Maya Hai by the Asa Kalvi father-son duo. And it's first, I first found this song and I thought it was interesting because there's a line in there where it's like, they made a kutia and then us kutia ke mathe par, and then they put something on the matha. And I was like, matha means forehead. Kutia sounds awfully a lot like kutia, which is the word for a female dog in Urdu. And I was like, what is this song about? So that's what originally drew me to it. I figured out later that kutia, you know, with context, it was probably means like house or something like that.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
But then, you step back from that interesting lyric, and it's actually a phenomenal song as well. So that, I think it's kind of Qawwali-esque. It's very, mm-hmm. it's got the same vocal style and musical arrangement of a Qawwali song. Maybe it's been popped up a little bit for Coke Studio, but I think that's good. popped up, you know, pop it. Pop it up, man. That's how the Coke Studio producers talk to each other. Like, hey, man, this song is good. What do you think? You know, thoda sa pop kar deta hai. Thoda sa pop it up. Pop it up. terrible. Yehi Khuda Hai is another. I love songs that showcase Atif Aslam's voice. I think that we've talked about this in our Bollywood episodes, but, you know, he was not a good, he's not classically trained. He just didn't have, the guy started in Jal and became a you know, international phenomenon, but the guy was never classically trained, but he's come into his own. And in these later kind of seasons of Coke Studio, he's really put his voice on display. I think Yehi Khuda Hai is one of those where he's just kills it. And then probably the last one is Tera Woh Pyar, Nawaz-e-Shikaram, which I believe it. I'm gonna look it up now. Right now, I'm pretty sure it's Momenam Ustesan. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is.
Momenam Ustesan. And then there's one that recently came across. It had Kuratulain Baloch, and it was I'm gonna have to find it. Here, why don't you tell me what some of your episodes while I take a look?
Okay. Well, as you Google away, going back to Atif, he has a Man Amadeam, which is with Gul Pandra. I think that's the same season he did Taj Dari Haram. I think there's some Farsi singing in that. My sister-in-law is, or sorry, my sister is married into an Afghan family, so that song is always popping at that household. And just another classic, I think that I really, really like. We also talk about a lot of these, again, Shafqat Aman Ali, right, who came from Fusion, was more of this rock type of you know, elements in his songs, but also obviously has a big Sufi side to him as well. But I really liked when him and Ahmed Jahanzeb, they did Allahu Akbar, which is in season 10, but a straight like Qawwali song. And it's kind of, it's really interesting and cool to see these artists that do different, that come from different disciplines and different styles of singing, trying new things, as we've mentioned again so many times. And it's awesome. There's obviously that Ali Sethi's Ranjish Hisahi is another one that I really, really like. There's so many. And it's fun to get in these arguments with my aunts and uncles, because the big hype was Atif singing Bazaar Haram, right, from Sabri Brothers. And I made my khala listen to it, my aunt. And she, like, turned it off. She's like, nay. She's like, no. Atif, he changed the tune. He changed it. And then you kind of force him to, like, listen to it. But I think it's fun because it kind of creates, like, a little bit of a debate, a little bit of dialogue, and a little back
spice,
and forth.
You want a little spice in the life.
Yeah, it's fun. Everybody loves a great debate, right? Well, was the original better? Was the new one better? Oh, right. Afri, when it came out in 2016? Nah, they totally butchered from the original one, right?
right.
Just more combo, more dialogue.
I found the... absolutely. I think that anytime you can have a debate like that, it's a healthy debate. And people, I mean, it makes you examine both versions, right? So it's a win-win. There's no losers there. The song I was looking for is Khuratale Baloj and Farhan Saeed. They sang Lathe Di Chadar. And honestly, I didn't recognize the song at first because they mixed it with Dekh Tera Kya, which is also another older song. I remembered it, but I couldn't place it. And then there's a part I'm going to sing is... Lathe di chadar utte sale di rang mahiya. That's how everyone recognizes that song, that part. And I just love how Khuratalein Baloj, which is, first of all, what a mouthful of a name. It's not even her real name, by the way. I was like, who is this person? Looked it up, and her name, hold on, I'm going to now look it up again. Her name is, maybe it is her name. Oh, it is her name. I lied. They call her Humsafar Girl. That's what I was thinking of, because she wrote that she was the singer in the title track for Humsafar in Humsafar, the movie serial, that we'll talk about, the TV dramas. But she says she's very Punjabi, and she says Abol Samane instead of Abol Samane, Abol Samane, and that just gets me every time. I don't know what it is. Something about that Punjabi kick just does it for me.
Abid Parveen has also been featured numerous times on Coke Studio. That's an OG, and a real, real OG. Some of her songs as well, but it's really cool to see just these artists just in the presence, right? In the flesh, and you see what goes into making a song, right? The sweat, the blood, the tears, just it's a workout, and just watching her perform is like, so it's like, oh my god, like, what am, holy cow, which normally you wouldn't have been exposed to.
And you know, I'll kind of take us home with this thought that I think it's going to continue to grow, and I think they're going to bring in even more varied artists and whatnot. We've already kind of seen that. You know, this past season in 2019 was huge. They had everyone from Rahat and Ali Haider to Abrar Al Haq and Atif Aslam, Faria Prevez, Hadika Kiani came on. But you know, in past seasons, they've also had people like Cruella, who everyone is, if you know, the song Alive is the one that made them very famous in the EDM scene. So they started to branch out a little bit. I think they're going to continue to do that. I think this is probably the biggest show. It's gonna go down as the biggest show in Pakistan's history, from a worldwide reach. And I'm excited to see where it goes. I think this is the best thing that we have right now.
Definitely. A lot of iterations that come to as well. Just want to give note, but there's Nescafe Basement, which is another underground in Pakistan. But again, just bringing these artists to the forefront and to the light. So, yeah, man. I mean, we'll definitely be adding a lot more Coke Studio songs on our playlist, Desi Standard Tunes. So everybody, be sure to tune in and to look out for that. Just to, if you're completely new to Coke Studio, we'll definitely give you a refresher and some songs that you need to be paying attention to. And join us in the hype. Join us in the discussion. Hopefully sure. It leads you to listen to the old ones. Yeah, and let's chat about it.
Yeah, for sure. Some of you might have noticed that we didn't take a break in the middle of our episode today to do our normal South Asian spotlight. And that's because we have something really special for you guys today instead. We're going to do things a little bit differently. So we're going to hear first from this week's South Asian Spotlight, just to, you know, throw that in as well and give you guys exposure to that. And then we're going to end our episode, actually, with an exclusive interview with one of the brightest stars featured in Coke Studio, Ali Sethi. My man, Maz Ali, got a chance to sit down with him one-on-one and ask him a bunch of our burning questions. And he's a super nice guy. I think you guys will find this interview fantastic. So, yeah, Maz Ali, take it away.
Pull up at any Desi event and you'll see every woman rocking her own unique style of South Asian clothing. And I'm not going to lie, I get a little jealous. No, I totally get jelly because South Asian fashion for men has largely stayed the same, allowing dudes to rock the same kurta for maybe 10 events a year. But that's why I'm pumped to be in the virtual studio today with Natasha Idnani, co-founder of Saffron Lane. What's up, Natasha?
Hey, Maz. Good to be here. I've seriously seen the struggle. I started Saffron Lane with my husband, Jay. We noticed there's a huge gap in accessibility to the latest South Asian styles outside of Asia, and we decided to change that.
There you go. Well, tell me more. I mean, how did it all begin?
Honestly, it was a romantic escape from our day jobs in 2017. But once my husband quit banking and I finished my MBA, it was full speed ahead. We went to India, Delhi, scoured high and low to find hidden gems, handpick some quality fabrics, and partner with some master tailors to craft our Saffron Lane look and feel.
And yeah, I mean, clearly the hard work paid off. Both me and Maz Khan had the pleasure, and thank you, of modeling your first collection at the Invogue Fashion Show last year. But I've been super keen to see your new collection.
I should be thanking you. Thank you for wearing Saffron Lane. But we're super keen to share it. The latest, like our latest collection of kurtas, Nehru vests, jackets, accessories, and more is now live at saffronlaneco.com.
Awesome. Well, we'll be sure to check it out. And one more time, everybody listening, that's saffronlane.com. So that's SAFFRON. Lane, L-A-N-E, co.com. Thank you so much, Natasha.
Thanks, Maz.
Yeah, peace out.
How's it going, everyone? This is Maz Ali from Desi Standard Time, and we are in the studio today with the one and only Pakistan's finest, Ali Sethi. Bataye.
Hi.
Kya haal
hai? Hi. How are you?
Did I kind of made you a little shy? Sorry from like the broad claim.
I love it.
All right, cool. Yeah, man. So again, thanks so much for taking this time to chat with me. But yeah, I mean, we just want to get to know you a little bit more, of course. So tell us a little more about your journey. Like, you know, like from, you know, as an artist, like, you know, you started out. I mean, I've seen some follow you, and obviously, like, you know, you start out drawing, you start out as a painter, you know, and that's kind of how I started out too.
Yeah.
I like to do that on my, you know, spare time when I was a kid, but like, you know, you went from that to a singer. So like, you know, what's that journey been like?
Yeah. And, in between, you know, though, I was an author as well. I am an author.
Slip that
no,
in.
I grew up in Lahore in Pakistan. I was very exposed to the arts and to a kind of very intellectually stimulating environment, because both of my parents are journalists, publishers. My dad was a book publisher,
right?
Then published along with my mother a weekly paper called the Friday Times,
right?
So I grew up around a lot of journalists, I grew up around a lot of activists, I grew up also around a lot of artists, and my mother in particular really insisted that we, my younger sister and I, be exposed as children to folk culture and traditional culture.
Right.
So traditional poetry, a lot of Urdu poetry, a lot of Punjabi poetry.
Right.
which we had to like recite when guests came over to the house and things.
On the spot.
Also do a lot of traditional music. So I grew up listening to a lot of Qawwali and Ghazal, a lot of it. So Ustad Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan, Abda Parveen Saiba, who then I went on to later collaborate with.
Awesome.
Dream come true.
Wow.
One of those things.
Yeah.
Farida Khanum Saiba, who I went on to study music with.
Yeah.
Mehdi Hassan, Noor Jahan, etc. So all of this stuff, and then the poetry affairs and whatever. So
right.
I grew up with all of that, but went through a schooling system in Pakistan where the arts were not generally encouraged.
You know,
the arts were sort of like in the realm of hobby, right?
Exactly, exactly.
So it's like you can do the arts to kind of add some color to your personality, but please just do us all a favor and stick to computer science and economics or medicine, because
just
that's
be quiet,
what we all need and that's
about,
what the country needs. So when I did all of that through high school, kind of in some ways, not restraining, but deliberately like marginalizing my innate skills or talents, which were for visual art, which were for music, which were for literature, and sort of had to work hard and do well at subjects like math and science and, you know, economics in order to get the grades and then, you know, get into a good college, which I miraculously did.
And then you're able to like pursue that.
So I went to Harvard. I got to Harvard as a Pakistani international student in 2002, 1 year after 9/11.
Right.
And, you know, I suddenly decided, I was like, you know what? I want to study the arts.
Yeah.
So I ended up being the South Asian Studies major, and I did like the equivalent of a minor in English and creative writing.
Awesome. Yeah.
And then I was an author. I wrote a novel. But in all this time, I was listening to and preparing for a life in music.
Yes. And actually, I wanted to piggyback off what you were saying. So, I mean, you know, Coke Studio, one of the great things about Coke Studio is that it takes the artists of today, right? And then they pay homage to, you know, these songs and these artists of yesterday, right? So in your case, like, you know, you did for Mehdi Saab. And so what's that like? I mean, tell me more about, like, you know, how is it, like, how are you able to, you know, pay homage to, like, the artists and at the same time, like, make sure that you're giving, like, you know, your own voice, right? At the same time, right? Like Atif Aslam did, you know, Tajdar-e Haram, right? From the Sovereign Brothers, right? So, like, how is that space? And, like, how is, like, how are you able to kind of, like...
I think that's a great question. I think that I approach it like... I mean, I like to think I approach it like a student of drawing or a student of painting who goes to a museum and has to make a study of an old master's painting. You know, you're not, the agenda is not to be as good as the master, because you will never be.
You'll never be.
The point is to kind of do a student's attempt, really to educate yourself. And perhaps people who will not have access to that painting, but who may see your study of the work in a contemporary context. So I think that's it. It's like, you know, curating or performing it in a, as a contemporary piece. But in my case, I think I try my best to be true to and to pay attention to the underlying principles of the music. So, you know, I do a very, in some ways, studious attempt to kind of make sure that the rag, which is the melodic structure of the piece, does not get violated. If I do improvise in the piece, I do it within the sort of mood of the raga. So then that draws a listener's attention to what the underlying sort of principle might be, right? So if I were to do a departure in a phrase, you know, like with Ranjishi Sahi, that line is like, Ranjishi Sahi. That's how Mehdi Saab, that's the phrase that he's made immortal. And most younger singers, when they sing it, they attempt that same thing. But I tried in variations like So these variations kind of draw attention to, you know, the kind of sea of musical knowledge that the masters have actually left behind. And so I approach it like a missionary, like somebody who's trying to bring younger audiences towards the khazana, towards the treasure chest.
Yeah, and I think that's why Coke Studio is so important, because, like, you're getting a cue as to, like, this is what our parents are listening, so now, you know, our new generation has that. So, no, I think well said. But I have a question for you. So, now, when you're making a song, right, you obviously have a certain narration in mind for the, that draws, you know, for the inspiration of the song, right? And then when you're performing the song, you have a certain emotion. I've always wondered this. So what's it like as a playback singer sometimes, right? For like a song, like for like a movie, right? To watch another actor, you know, lip sync your song. Like, mm-hmm. are you sometimes like disappointed? Or are you sometimes like, wow, he did a good job. But like what goes through your mind when you see that?
That's another great question, actually. I've never thought about that. But I think, well, usually what happens is that the song gets recorded first. And then the actor has to, or the actors have to perform to it.
Makes sense,
for the camera. Right. So the visualization happens later. And the music gets recorded first. Because they have to sync to the however it's been sung.
Right.
And in my experience, at least, I don't approach the lyrics. And this can also be... I think annoying for directors and producers who often come back to me and say, could you please do a slightly more like faithful rendition? I don't approach it literally.
Right.
You know, I approach it with as much like sort of, you know, intellectual freedom, with a really open mind. And I try to make it as the singing as metaphorical as possible, you know? So song that we just did for the movie Superstar, you know, Bekara Ishq Mein.
Mm-hmm.
There's that part where it goes, bekara ishq mein tarte chal diye. Right? So it's like tarte chal diye. It's like about swimming. So that part I have tried to do with as much swimmingness as possible, right? But then in the next time, in the reiteration, when I re-sing that line, I'll go, bekara ishq mein tarte chal diye. Right, so I'll try to add some variation so that somebody who may be listening to it with sadness or with like longing or with like the ache of not being with their loved one or not being able to have the one they love should also be able to relate to it. It shouldn't just be for the hero who has the heroine in his arms, you know. It should be for people who suffer as well. That's my agenda.
Wow, okay.
It's a good way of being a successful singer in Pakistan.
Yeah.
Which I'm not yet. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, so well put. Cool. So, you know, we're in Hollywood where, like, you know, we have actors, singers, and, like, you know, dancers, jacks of all trades. Now, is that something that, you know, I mean, you as a singer right now, I mean, that's like your passion, but, like, I mean, have you considered, like, you know, branching out into other? Like,
yes, I have. Like, I do like more directing, and more acting. Actually, because when I do my sort of live shows now, I end up just combining elements of storytelling, of stand up comedy, of a little bit of like a sort of the kind of person who leads a historical documentary narrative, you know, with the performance of music. And the same sort of thing happens when I'm making a recording, whatever. Right. I'm keen to, you know, curate the thing as well as perform it.
I
think that for me, I find that kind of a life very exciting, the prospect of that. And I'm working on it. Let's see.
Yeah.
I hope to write a show.
Yeah, there you go. That's awesome. Yeah. And I think that's why I like to say, like, you're a true artist, in my opinion, because, like, you have, like, these other, like, you know, talents, and, like, it all, you are able to bring it all together and, like, you know, display it out to the public, like, really, really nicely. And I think that's awesome.
Thank you.
I love the Ishq video as well.
Because it's
like, no, because, like, I mean, I don't see, like, anything, like, a Pakistani artist do anything, like, unique, like, that before. Like, you know, with the hands and stuff, you know? So I just thought that's, like, a very, specific, and I mean, it was very unorthodox, and I thought, you know, I'm very appreciative of that. So well, thank you very much, Ali Bhai.
Thank you for
taking this time to sit down with me. You heard it here at Desi Standard Time. Ali Sethi, watch out for his things. Follow him
on Instagram.
That's it. You gotta find his profile on your own. But yeah, thank you so much, man. I appreciate you being here.